Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast. Content discussed on this podcast is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals. Now, let's start with the quote of the week.
There's a time and place for all things. The difficulty is to use them only in their proper time and place. There's a time and place for all things. The difficulty is to use them only in the proper time and place. With motive, you will become clairvoyant of means. You will seize and command them. Without motive, you will wobble about. This, in building a team, in building an organization, in building a company, is one of the greatest lessons. You cannot do anything without a shared and common sense of purpose.
Welcome back to another episode of Friday Wrap, guys. It's, it's Friday again. We're already in March. So pretty much one quarter of the year has gone for 2021. And, I think the Spark Your Fire team has agreed on making a bit of change. You know, we always love change. Small changes every week is going to be good. So this week we have decided that we're going to bring our favorite drink onto the show. So I'll start. I've got an apple cider next to me, except that because I've got a meeting this afternoon, so I couldn't actually pop it yet, but I will pop it as soon as it's finished. But right now, as a replacement, I've actually got an OAK iced coffee drink in front of me right now. So it's like, it's a milk drink, let's put it that way, guys. So I will let these two gentlemen share what they have in front of us, what sort of luxurious drinks they have in front of us.
Happy Friday, boys. Good to see your faces again, especially when I'm drunk. It's easier to see your faces when I'm drunk. I'm just joking.
That worries me a bit about what we're about to talk to, talk about next then. What do you have, Jazz?
So I'm drinking Carlton Draft. And just in case if some of the figures that I talk about today are not accurate, that's not my fault. That's the fault of this beer that I'm drinking.
Disclaimer already. And we're only like 1 minute in. All right. Now, very good Carlton Draft. I know John loves Carlton, the actual suburb. So
I'm drinking a wild turkey with American honey. Okay. With ice. I'm actually also drinking coffee and water. So I just intend to leave the podcast dehydrated. That's the main thing. Dehydrated and a little bit silly. So, yes, cheers, boys. And thank God it's Friday. It has never meant more than it does today.
Thank God it is Friday. And I think we're having a drink because this week there's been a bit of bloodbath across the whole financial system as well. I mean, all investors will be looking at it. I don't know how people look at it, but I love, to be honest, I love seeing red because it's a good time to get into the market again. So this week has been a good opportunity for me to snack up a bit more Tesla shares, full disclosure, of course. How you guys feel about seeing all the reds this week? I mean, it's across silver, it's across Bitcoin. John, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, last week we talked quite prophetically in hindsight. We talked about the 10-year yield telling you kind of everything you need to know. And as it turned out, when we woke up on Saturday morning, the 10-year yield spiked erratically, which is something you've got to watch. And it's been moving up ever since. So the rise in the 10-year Treasury yield in the US being kind of the benchmark asset across the globe, really informative. In this case, it sort of told us a couple of things. One is that the market is expecting inflation and the market is also expecting growth to outpace expectations. So there's a growth story, there's an inflation story, and that's been the way it's been covered in the media. But I'd add that there's a third story, and that is that there's a risk story. What does it mean when the bond yield spikes? It means people are selling debt, they're selling treasuries. The reason they're doing that is because there's deemed to be too much risk in holding this paper asset. So they say essentially, if I'm going to hold this US dollar junk or this Australian dollar junk for 10 years, I'm going to demand a higher return than 1%. So they've pushed the yields up. It's pushed all other assets down because, people are chasing yield again. It's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting. What I think personally is that the Fed will intervene and it will be timed with the $1.9 $1 trillion stimulus package that is on its way through the US Congress. So when that happens, there'll be a Fed intervention to make that liquidity happen and yields will go back down. What do you reckon, Jazz?
Yeah, I'm with you, John. Pretty much agree with everything you just said over there. The only thing that I'll add to that is that it won't surprise me that Fed or Jerome Powell at some point basically just pegs the yield to a certain number, whether it's 1% or 0.5%. I think that needs to happen. Otherwise, the market won't be stable at all with the yields just going up and down the way they have been. It's driving the markets. The volatility in the market just won't stop, which will nervous the investors out. The Fed is going to keep buying it. Doesn't matter how much money they have to pump into the system, but they will keep buying it, which means they will try and keep the yield under control. And I think that control is somewhere probably around whatever that number will be, probably 1% or something.
Yeah, I've heard that the next intervention is going to be something like Operation Twist. Operation Twist is something they did 10 years ago, which was to kind of normalize the yield curve and to drive down short-term rates and drive up long-term rates. And they'll do some form of that, again, what they call yield curve control.
Yeah.
And no, I think that...
Yeah, put it this way, sorry to interrupt, but put it this way, the system is built or is on standing on a shaky grounds right now. So every now and then, put it this way, there's an earthquake or a tsunami through these yields spiking up and all. But Fed basically just has to keep controlling it one way or the other, which is keep buying the bonds, right? And we have said that before, that that all that means is basically Cantillon effect, which is the people who hold the assets, which David, we discussed, I think last week was, people who hold the assets will keep performing well, especially on leverage. And the ones who don't will keep suffering, which is whether you call it Cantillon effect or whether you call it K-shaped recovery, whatever it is. That's what's going to, I think that we'll see that happening more and more throughout the year. So every time there's a little earthquake, it shakes the whole building, essentially.
Yeah, Cantillon effect. I like that one. The other thing is that the economy can't afford higher rates. The government is so in debt. So where if the interest rates get to, you know, normal rates of even the last 10 years where they've been very low, the interest on the US debt would be greater than total tax receipts. I mean, we're getting to that sort of end game. So they'll have to get rates down again to keep the music playing a bit longer.
Yeah. Nothing surprising. I'm not
part of the normal panicky. Part of the normal, and just because of the large volatility, that's why we're seeing it kind of fluctuating even further, right? So on both ends,
and the Q1 results coming out, companies announcing the results and all in America, all that.
That's
stuff.
True. That's so true.
that creates a little bit of a nervousness in the markets, and once those results are out, we should see things going back to normal a little bit.
Kind of shows that, again, there's a huge disconnect in terms of the actual company profits and results versus what's actually been doing in the, you know, in the assets, right? Like, they used to have a correlation, but now with the amount of money that's in the system, that's just, not anymore.
Well, the only correlation is $2 trillion stimulus. That tells you the whole story within the first 3 months. So our projection or the speculation we did last year, or the bold prediction that we said over the part last year was, a mind one was that Fed will print roughly about $7 trillion this year. And we have seen two, there's only five more to go.
And I reckon they'll do that fairly quickly as well, to a certain extent. You know, it's, absolute crazy. And as a side effect on that, I guess, you know, US properties is also going bonkers. I think I saw the other day, you know, same thing. It's like what Australia is currently doing. House prices spiking, mortgage spiking, exactly the same as what's currently happening. And I think that's going to be across the whole world. Just as you said, you know, this is basically a whole world movement now, because US started printing and everyone else forced to follow as well. And that causes the asset prices to continue inflate. As such, so
So property, let's talk property, our favorite topic, right? David, I sent you guys the article just before on how the Adelaide, all markets are doing good within Australia, but Adelaide is very calm and steady market. And when you read an article that is talking about Adelaide property market, where the price was, listed price was somewhere between 950 to a mil, and all of a sudden it ended up selling for 1.5 mil, which is just shy of 1.5, which is roughly about 50% over the asking price on an auction. This is Adelaide market. That's my key point here, right? We call it a very calm, steady market.
Well, it's a waterfront property as a start. I think that's probably one of the main reasons, because we know that after COVID, everyone is after lifestyle. So, you know, if it's got some sort of waterfront, if it's got a good view, if it's got that desirability for people to live in, people are willing to pay top bucks at the moment to try to get that type of property. So I think that 50% over asking price is a certain factor to it, because, you know, this property can actually see the water directly. It's a direct view as such. So I think that's why that kind of prices are happening in Adelaide. I would say it's probably not a normal scenario. This is one, obviously, media loves these type of stories, right? Because it sparks conversations. But I don't know. I think if you look at other Adelaide auction results, which I don't have in front of me, then I would probably say it will be more normalized to the point maybe, 10 to 20%. It's like the risk over of whatever the asking price, like the rest of the Australia is kind of doing at the moment. Yeah, John, what do you reckon?
Look, I don't know the Adelaide market that well. I know that it was the best performing city last year. And so there's always a kind of momentum that these cities have when there's a boom. But as we've discussed, it's a very macro heavy environment. So all the capital cities are doing really well, and all the capital cities have their stories about these very strange results. So Adelaide is, in a sense, not unique, because in Sydney and Melbourne, I'm hearing the same things about properties going X hundreds of thousands of dollars over reserve. But there's one thing that you kind of SMS'd us during the week, David, which I thought was very interesting, and it was that you're a broker, and you're seeing that valuations are coming in below the price that people are paying.
Yep.
And just trying to unpack that is interesting, because it sounds to me as though the market is going up so quickly that the comparables aren't relevant anymore. So value is relying on comparables, let's say, over the last 6 months. But something that sold in October last year is totally irrelevant. Is that what you're seeing, guys?
Yeah, look, I'm based on my conversations, I mean, I haven't got that many. I'm starting to see a few more in the current environment. But based on my conversation with a few different bank business development managers, they're certainly seeing that there's more of a trend now in terms of valuations not stacking up to what people are winning, in particular, over auctions. Hmm. Because we all know during auctions, you know, people can be quite, the competition can be fierce, and it's easy to go overboard in terms of what your original budget is, and easy to go out of control. So, and look, that's exactly my point. I think we've mentioned before, I think January, February this year has been really unusual, to the point where I personally think that the price has exacerbated hugely in the last 2 months. So January, February, that's when it really started, because I've been monitoring the market the whole of last year as well. And I didn't get that feeling. As a matter of fact, if I look back into the sales results, so for certain periods of time around the suburbs, they're still trending around maybe a house, maybe around 1.1, 1.2. But now everything is asking and selling around 1.3 and 1.4 in the last 2 months. And therefore, as you said, the comparables, that's even back in December, November and December, does not stack up already. And that's what valuers have on hand when they go and see the property, because, you know, they're probably unlikely they're going to be at the auction. Of course not. And then when they see the property, they just look at it from a cosmetic, from a structural perspective, then they look at it comparing to what was being sold. And they had to come up with a logical conclusion to say, look, it's probably not worth what you guys pay for, to that extent, because, you know, the comparables are not stacking up to what you're paying, what you're giving me here. So, I think that's but definitely a huge risk for buyers in the current market. You know, we all know that for those of you who are in the game, you know, we're starting to see anything between $100,000 to $200,000 or even $200,000 plus over the price guide. And that you need to be cautious, because if you're going in a high LVRs, the high loan to value ratios, and you don't have a lot more room to move and you don't have a lot of cash available, if valuation does come in low, then you'll be in a very difficult place to try to settle the property. So buyers beware. It is starting to happen in the last, especially in the last 2 months, valuation started to come in low. So be careful about your offers. Be careful about what you're putting in. You know, make sure that you're not going overboard is probably my suggestion at the moment.
Well, it's interesting, the data. So this is the first podcast in March, which means we've got the February data available to us, and February is the shortest month. And national house prices or dwelling values, so including units, went up by 2.1% in the month. So annualized, of course, that's 24%. That's nationally. Sydney went up by 2.5%, which is really weird that Sydney would be at the upper range of that. Group of cities. Melbourne up 2.1% in the month. Brisbane 1.5%, but one of the best over the quarter. Adelaide 0.8%. Perth 1.5%. Hobart 2.5%. Absolutely unbelievable. And capitals and regional areas are basically on a par as well. So I think that the tree change might be fading out, and this is just very macro heavy. Everything's going up. That is the highest monthly increase since 2013. It's just staggering, the amount of kind of the price increases. But what I find interesting when I look at the data is it's actually not that there's all this new demand. Demand is high. It's higher than average, but it's not staggering if you look at the amount of demand over the last couple of years. It's actually that there's no supply. Supply is down nationally about 19% compared to the previous year. And over the last couple of years, it's gone down 20% per year since about 2017. So there's actually just very little stock and a little bit of an uptick in demand. But boy, it's coming through in prices.
I think I saw the other day that when they're actually saying that the supply, I can't remember which article, the supply year on year has actually increased, but because of the amount of speed the transactions happening, the equivalent is actually the actual supply is less than what had happened, because they just get snacked up so quickly by the buyers. So strong buyer demand with a relatively short supply of stock is what's currently causing it, and definitely the fear of missing out mindset, which I'm sure you're seeing at the moment across the board as well, John and Jazz, right? So I think that's primarily what's fueled this. And look, I know that data, and you know, like I think Melinda Jennison from the other day that Jazz and I jumped on, she's reporting that Brisbane on the ground is exactly the same thing, except she doesn't quite agree with the numbers that CoreLogic has released, because this is basically a lag indicator. Whereas on the ground is completely different. You know, you're not only paying 2.5% over the price. Most of the time, you're paying a lot higher, like what I'm seeing. You know, some of the areas, as I said, there's probably some people are paying 200K over what the price guide is. Now, that's probably looking at 20% more, not 2.5, right? Now, so, you know, I think March will be an interesting month, because I reckon that number is probably going to pick up even further as more settlements have taken place, as the new prices have now settled in. So that number, I personally feel, is only going to accelerate. But I do have a good question for you, gents. This is about timing. And I know a lot of buyers at the moment, you know, listening to this podcast go, yeah, that's all well and good. Now, I know that we're prone for some growth, but is actually a good time to get into the market right now?
So again, there's no straight yes or no, but if I was to just put a blanket approach, I think we are at the start of this run, right? So we may see a few roadblocks on the way, like RBA coming out, tightening the, APRA coming out and tightening some of the lending regulations. Mm-hmm. But I think we are really getting started. We haven't really seen the price growth that we expect to see in this cycle, right? So this is just the first 2 months of it. So is it light? No. Do you have to rush? No. Can you be opportunistic? Yes. Is how I look at it. Just make sure your finances are in place. That's all. But don't have to go and kill yourself bidding at an auction just because someone else is bidding crazy high. So you don't have to. I don't think we are anywhere near that situation. This is a demand that there has been a pent up demand from last year. So it will slow down, I think, a little bit over the next couple of months as we head into winter. And maybe that's a good time to jump in. But no need to rush or overpay is how I look at it.
So you're pretty calm. That's good, Jazz, because I know a lot of buyers are not. They're like, David, like, I need to get financed today because, you know, tomorrow I'm going to be paying 2% more. And 1 week after, I'm going to be paying 5% more. You know, the price movement is no longer on a weekly, sorry, on a monthly basis. It's actually on a more of a weekly basis now. So, you know, you'll be able to tell that a lot of the investors at the moment is kind of like, okay, well, do I really jump in and maybe pay 20% over today just so that I can secure something and I'm not going to miss out this opportunity? Or should I still sit on the fence and wait until potentially 20% has come to fruition and then go into the market and start bidding and compete? So, you know, this is an interesting psychology question, I think.
Also comes down to the property as well, right? If the property is in a red hot area and it has got some special appeal to it, whether it's the heritage look or it's just got some beautiful park opposite to it, whatever it may be, right? Then maybe, yeah, but I still don't think that you need to rush. I think, yes, there is demand in the market and it's a pent-up demand. I think it will cool down a bit. And if it doesn't, there will be other measures that will be put in place to calm the market down. But at this stage, it's just the pent-up demand. And that pent-up demand, real estate agents are using probably to their favor to let the momentum build up even higher.
How long do you reckon that that intervention is going to come in? Are we looking at potentially 6 months, 12 months?
The way I'll answer that is if it keeps going the way it is,
mm-hmm.
we'll see it this year.
Okay.
But I think RBA and APRA will wait and watch to see whether it's just the pent-up demand and whether it's purely homeowners who are buying the properties or upgrading, whatever it is. Or is there now investor activity that's starting to take in? Because if there's a lot more investor activity, or if the demand shifts more towards the investors instead of home buyers, which currently is mainly being driven by home buyers, genuine buyers, basically, if the demand shifts towards investors, then APRA and RBA will jump in pretty quickly. If it keeps going at the pace that it is, right? I think they will just watch over the next few months and see what the investor activity is like, what the owner-occupier and the first-home buyer activity is like. And then based on that, they'll pull the trigger. Like what we discussed last week, I think it was, New Zealand have put in place restrictions for the investors where if it's an investor, you have to come up with a 40% deposit. Now, generally, investors won't prefer a 40% deposit, right? They'll prefer a 90% loan. So if we see the investor activity uptake or it shoots up like a hockey stick kind of thing, if it does happen, then it's this year. If it's just first home buyers, owner occupiers or upgraders, then I don't think APRA will care that much because that's a genuine demand.
Yeah, so I think there are two parts to the question. There's one part of the question, which I think Jazz has answered, which is will property prices go up? So this specific part of the cycle, whether it's a good time to buy. And I think the other part of the question to your point, Dave, is whether it matters, like whether you should even bother trying to time a market, any market, particularly a real estate market. So to the first point, is now a good time to buy? I guess my official answer is that I don't know. No one knows. Experts don't know. Everyone's wrong on timing of all asset prices and particular property. And don't bother trying to figure it out because you'll be wrong. My personal view is similar to Jazz's. I think it's going to run a little bit longer. I suspect intervention will probably not happen this year. But again, like, I don't know, and I could be wrong. But I think this will run to mid-decade with some small corrections, but generally speaking, run to mid-decade. But I think it's entirely irrelevant because I think whether property's going up or not, it's in a sense just an academic exercise. I think that property, generally speaking, and if I take a step back, property goes up 80% of the time. And I know that a lot of people try to wait for the next correction. And when the next correction comes along, they don't jump in. So, you know, if you need to buy real estate, if you need to buy a house, you should buy it. And if you would like to accumulate a property portfolio, you should get started because property is expensive and it's going to take a long time to do that. So timing, so here's my general thing is that timing of the real estate market is not really a luxury you have because it's not like buying BHP shares or Tesla shares where you just go in and buy. The thing that makes real estate different is it comes with a 30-year mortgage and that changes everything. And that means that you can't wait around for the property market to go down. You have to jump in the minute the bank likes you. The minute you can get finance is when you buy your property. And that's the only thing that you need to worry about. And in our lives, we probably are only attractive to the bank for probably 15 years in between the ages of, say, 25 and 40. Have I got my maths right? That's it, right? That's it. So you need to buy in that time probably as much as you can. And if there's a boom going on between the ages that you are 25 to 40, kind of suck it, like, it's tough because that's the best time for you personally. So when you buy properties, all dependent on your own finances, when your peak earning is and whether the bank is going to lend you money, because everything else is speculating and trying to pick the cycles is a fool's errand. Yeah, so that's my main point. The one other thing I'd say is people who do really well in property are the people who try to catch the second cycle. There are people who say, look, I'm in the middle of a cycle. I probably missed 10% of the run and I've got probably another 15% ahead of me, which is not going to make me rich. But I'm going to invest for the next 20-year cycle and that's what's going to make me rich. So I think people who take that type of time horizon say, this cycle I'm just accumulating and I'll make my money in the second cycle and I'll be 50 by the time that's over, they're the people who do really well. There's an article on my website called The Second 10 Years, which is really worth thinking about. It sort of says that the first decade of property ownership, you don't make any money because you're making sort of inflation plus some rental yields and all that sort of stuff. But it's the second 10-year period that you really make your money because your property is growing off a base that's likely already doubled. And you've got to have the patience to get in as early as you can and wait for that second cycle before it starts to materialize for you. So don't worry too much about timing. Just figure out when you can buy.
Great plug for your blog too, mate.
Just the article.
Well done. Kudos for that. And I think it's also important in the current environment to have some sort of advisors around you, you know, whether that's a mortgage broker, whether that's a buyer's agent like you, John, to be able to help the buyers because, you know, a lot of times they need a bit of guidance. And, you know, as a first-time investor, it is very easy to be tricked into just follow the herd, pay whatever price just to be able to get into the market. But if you have an experienced advisor like John, for example, will be able to help you, you know, but say this is probably realistically what you should be paying today, you know, and if you cannot secure it at this kind of price, I mean, what will be the, you know, there needs to be some sort of upper limit that you set to yourself so you don't go all in without any limit when you attend any kind of auction. So I think it's in this market is even more important, I think, to rely on the likes of buyer's agents, in my personal opinion, because they're the one that's got the experience. They're the one that's going to be able to help you to be able to, I guess, from an asset selection perspective, because we all know right now, even the B grade or the C grade type of properties are basically selling for like hotcakes. But when the tide goes out, these properties are going to be the one that drops like freefall first as well. So, you know, you need to be careful about your asset selection in the current market. You need to be careful about how much is the entry price that you're getting into a degree. Yes, you're going to hold long term, but at the same time, you know, pay reasonable prices because number one, like the valuation issue that we talked about. And number two, the type of property that you're getting, you know, the location and all that kind of stuff, everything needs to be considered. So I actually think, back to my point, I actually think that this is a time where you especially important to have your advisors around you to be able to guide you through.
I think John made a really good point over there, which is the patience, right? Patience is the key in this game. If you can leverage the market and bank lets you, and there's only that small window of 15 years where bank is favorable to your side if you have got a good income, and that's the period where you are earning decent money as well as you head towards your 30s, mid-30s kind of thing. That's a really, really good point. And then after that, if you can have a patience to hold on to it for next 20 years, you're a winner. But the problem is a lot of people lose the patience once they see that there's a 20% gain in the property. They're like, yep, let's get out of it. We made our money. But what they forget is there's a CGT, there's a get out cost, and then there's a buy-in cost after that, which takes away about 10% of your capital. Well, roughly, but it's more like 6%, 6 to 10% or whatever that figure works out to be.
Yeah, the thing about real estate is that it actually doesn't move up in a straight line. It's not that even. It's very lumpy. Property is very lumpy, which is to say that while it's going up 80% of the time, it's actually moving up in bursts and most of the time doing nothing, like slightly moving up, but property does nothing most of the time. It moves up in bursts in short periods of time. And to think that you know when those bursts are going to be is impossible. So you need to get in so that whenever that burst happens and you don't know when that'll be, you're taking advantage of it. So just hold real estate because it's an essential asset that all wealthy people own, you know, so you don't need to reinvent the way to get rich. Wealthy people own real estate, and then wait for that burst in prices. You know, we saw in between 2000 and 2004, property prices went vertical. And then between 2004 to 2013, they went sideways. So, you don't know when the burst will be. But it's something of value that you should try to own depending on your own circumstances. So
The owner-occupied demand doesn't seem to stop. The investor side of things is starting to pick up slightly as well, because I think when you look at... So the yield at the moment is terrible. Let's put it that way. From an investor perspective, the yield, the gross rental yield is quite terrible, like in the median, in the capital cities, let's say, like Sydney and Melbourne, right? But because of the low rate that we're seeing at the moment, you know, it can get as low as investor finance for what, around the twos in the front? It's actually relatively similar to what people used to get when they were like a 5% gross rental return. So that's why investors are starting to come back into the space as well. And that's why they're also in the competition, is because of that factor. The net effect of the low interest rate essentially cancels out the low gross rental yield. So people find it that's easier to hold. People find it as, you know, it's still worthwhile getting into the market. Now I can see there's going to be a lot of punters in this cycle try to take... Just like every time, like when there's a property booming, there's always going to be punters try to go, right, I'm going to try time to market. I'm going to get in now and I'm going to hold for 2 years until the music stops and I'm going to sell that and I'm going to flip, you know. So, and I think those people joining into the party at the moment is also making it extremely difficult for first home buyers, unfortunately. But it is part of the competition. And I think, you know, the advice that I have is keep hanging in there. This is not going to go on forever. I don't think so. I don't think, you know, we all agree that this is going to go for a bit longer, but it's not going to go on forever. So the one that can stand and the one can last until towards the end is always going to be the winner.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I'd say also focus on your objective and focus on the asset, because the purpose, this conversation I have all the time, the purpose is getting the asset and moving on with your life, or getting the asset and moving towards your goals. So if your goal is to buy 5 properties within 10 years, the only way you can do that is by buying 1 property and then 2 properties and then 3. So focus on buying 5 properties in 10 years, and don't worry about outsmarting the market. If you need to, like, sometimes you're going to need to pay next year's price, but if you've got clarity around what your goals are, then I think that you can block out a lot of that noise about what the market's doing, whether it's fair or not fair. And you can focus on, like, reaching your goals. I think that's really important, because one thing to bear in mind in this particular upswing is that we're still just at the 2017 prices, or maybe we've just eclipsed that, but we've just actually gone back to the highs of 2017, which is to say that the market did nothing for 4 years. And, you know, I'm fine with that. I don't know if it means it's expensive or not expensive, but the disconcerting thing is how fast we got here. But the overall prices, particularly relative to interest rates, they're not outrageous at all. And, you know, often we think something feels expensive, but often they're not expensive. So just focus on your goals. If your goal is to own real estate, then you should buy real estate. If your goal is to own a share portfolio, buy a share portfolio. And just block everything else out, I would say. Focus on your own goals.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. All right. Well, I think
that's the wild turkey speaking, actually.
I think we all still maintain quite a bit of sanity throughout this conversation, which is good. And that's probably what, despite all the alcohol that we have in our hands, which is even better. But I think that, hopefully this conversation benefits some of the investors who's currently either sitting on the fence and thinking, should I jump in the pool now, seeing that everyone's expecting that it's going to be another 20% on top, or should I wait out a bit more, right? So there's never the right or wrong answer. I think it just comes down to your each individual circumstances, what are you trying to achieve, and keep a long-term perspective. I think ultimately is what's going to help. Awesome. Anything else, gents?
Not a lot. We'll watch the markets and see what happens next week. Like always, play safe, stay safe, don't rush, don't over leverage. There's always a time for everyone in the market, but don't try and time the market. Cheers, John, Jazz, and David.